Another man done gone from the county, from another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
Oh,
the jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on, I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Thank you and good morning and welcome to Crossroads. We're coming to you live from Washington, D.C. We want to thank everybody who tuned in weekly on Crossroads. We've been running into people all over the city, Nikichi. And the minute they hear our name, they say, oh, we listen to the show. We got a listener audience that's mind-blowing. And I didn't know that many people would really tune in on Tuesday mornings and hear what we have to say. And a lot of that is to you, Nikichi. I mean, you are a fantastic co-host. I want to thank you for being with us all these years. We've been doing this, Nikichi, for about 5 to 8 years, haven't we?
Actually, I think it's been a little bit more longer than that.
Yeah, about 10 years.
Is yeah, about right 10 here? Years.
10 years. Well, that's something. Okay, what we're going to do is we should open up what we call the grapevine. And remember that Crossroads is heard around the world. So we have a global audience now. And some of our issues are relevant and germane to folks all over the world in terms of incarceration. Because America has only 5% of the total world population. But yet we make up 25% of the incarcerated population worldwide. So we lock up and incarcerated more people in Washington, D.C. than any other city in the world. So thank you for tuning in. And we'll start off with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey, I'm going to ring the bell. That's for Jameel Abdullah Al-Amin, Black Power activist, known as H. Rap Brown. He died at 82, and folk, it's hurt. It was sad that he died. We discussed this case in January of this year when he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and we requested and put that word out to please let the man come home and die with some dignity with his family. And he didn't. They kept him incarcerated. H. Brown has been one of the black militants in the 1960s with a call to arms against white oppression. His trademark black beret and sunglasses, dexterous mind, and imposing 6'5" frame with his afro. He was persuasive and charismatic figure to many. Adept at rallying black audience to his cause while alarming many white listeners. H. Brown and Stokely Carmichael, and also named as Kwame Ture, we met in Vince Chilligo back in the 70s when he came up and had a ride there over Cambridge, Maryland, back in 75 or 76. I want to say thank you. And folk, I am really hurt that we put out an appeal for this man's release. He was dying. And there would nobody step up to the plate to let them go. Because he fought for us, risked his life for us, died for us, incarcerated. And he wasn't able to die with some dignity with his loved ones and family. So to H. Brown, he was credited with the saying, burn, baby, burn. And rap was all over this city, he and Stokely. They were militants and they spoke on our behalf. And folk, we need to do something for those folk who risked their lives for us, and they fought later years in life. They should have the dignity, the decency and the dignity that we can burn these men and women, just like Assata Shakur died last week. We need to make
sure. She died on free territory, so.
Yeah, she was free, you know, but still.
Assata, they never got her. I'm just saying that. And just for the record, H. Brown became a Muslim, and his Muslim name was Imam Jameel Al-Amin. I just wanted to say that for all the folk in the Islamic faith out there.
So we need to keep this in mind. We got other black militants and folks like the black, the MOVE people in Philadelphia, folks who are still in prison, who are dying to risk their lives for us. We need to make sure we have some kind of fund or some kind of assistance for these men and women and when they get up in their age, because they don't have a pension or retirement fund. But yet they risk their lives for us. So to H. Rap Brown, I want to ring the bell for all of those who are no longer with us. Rest in peace, my brother. We miss you. Okay, here we go with the grapevine. Tree-hanging deaths at Delta State University raises dread of Mississippi past lynchings. A black freshman's apparent suicide on campus is one of at least 9 black men who have been found hanging from trees since 2000 in Mississippi. In the heart of the Mississippi farmland where cotton plantations once drove the slave economy, the recent news of a black student found hanged from a tree on the campus of Delta State University evokes stark images of the state's post-Civil War history of public lynchings. The September 15th death of DeMarturion Trey Reed has been ruled a suicide by local officials, but Reed's mother, Sophia, and other family members dispute that finding. They, along with community members, claim at a rally on campus. Since 2000, in addition to Reed, at least 8 black men have been found hanging from trees in Mississippi, according to a review of past news stories. Mississippi and the South's deadly racism inspired the protest lyrics of Strange Fruit, which describe a time when lynching or the hanging of black men, women, and even children was common in the Deep South. During the post-slavery era known as Jim Crow, black people were reminded constantly that they were less than and less than white, less than human. And all 9 deaths of the black men they found who were hung, all of the deaths were ruled suicides. How do you hang yourself? 9 cases of individuals hanging themselves, and it's all been ruled suicide. The competing vision to fix the country's juvenile justice crisis. Some states keep adding beds in already troubled facilities, while others are trying to alternate approaches to detention or keeping some children out of the system altogether. He wasn't the only one to go through the psychological anguish that solitary confinement can cause. In Shelby County, which includes Memphis, is where David was detained. Children as young as 13 have been held in near total isolation for days and even weeks at a time without schooling, fresh air, or basic human contact. Experts say that kind of social deprivation is a well-recognized trigger for psychiatric consequences. Even for young people who are not held in isolation, a lack of meaningful programming can also contribute to increased violence. That was the conclusion of the independent monitor tasked with improving conditions in the long troubled juvenile detention. I want to know why that our black youth are being targeted all over the country. Legislation is being penned, formulated, and drafted all over the country, targeting black youth. Come on, people, let's stop this juggling boogie. As of November 2025, there have been 43 executions carried out in the United States. This number is a significant increase from the 25 executions that took place in all of 2024, and it is the highest since 2010. The executions have occurred in 11 states so far this year, with Florida carrying out the most with 15.
Jesus.
What Congress' new crime bill would mean for D.C., from imposing cash bail to decreasing police oversight, Congress is weighing changes that could remake D.C.'s justice system and revive long-running fights over who controls public safety in the district. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Thank you for tuning in. Now we get to what our guest, we have joining us this morning, none other than a dynamic, I call him a young man. He's probably older than me, ain't you? His name is Oye Owoliwa.
Yes.
Is a licensed pharmacist, nature explorer, and current U.S. representative of Washington, D.C. His passion to guide his community to healthy outcomes led him to the pharmacy profession. Since moving to D.C., Dr. Oye spent his non-working time exposing DC elementary students to science through hands-on learning. We ran into Dr. Ouye. He's been on the show 2 years ago, in fact. And we brought him back because what's going on in Congress right now, we need people like Dr. Ouye who speak truth to power. And I want to say this morning, thank you, Dr. Ouye, for coming in this morning. You got a big smile. Look at your teeth just all over the place.
Hey, man, I always smile when I see you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for welcoming me back to Crossroads.
Thank you. Thank you. So Congress has passed four bills or several bills entertaining to strip D.C. of its home rule authority and power. And I read in the paper where you're one of the few persons who were quoted in the Washington Post who took a strong stand against the Congress' actions against D.C. What is your number one take about this, Dr. Ouye, in terms of Congress's usurping, reducing or minimizing or trying to take over the power of D.C.? We had our own home rule that gave us the authority and the power to make laws pertaining to our citizens. But they left one main piece out. We have no voting representation in Congress. You are our shadow senator. What is a shadow senator, and what is your role to help us, and what's going on now?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And almost taking it back to the beginning, about 50 plus years ago, D.C. was granted home rule, which allowed us to vote for our mayor, allowed us to vote for our council, allowed us to vote for commissioners and beyond. And, you know, although that's not statehood, for a long time, that was seen as just enough. And since I've been representative for the past 4 or 5 years, the conversation has been about D.C. statehood, has been about getting voting representation in Congress, like you said, not just to be able to, you know, cast a vote on judges and things like that, but also to make sure we don't have such oppressive actions from the Congress to us right now without any protection. And as you mentioned earlier, this year alone, especially with Trump back in office, D.C. has seen so many attacks, whether it's ripping up our Black Lives Matter Plaza or our budget being frozen, to now the 14 plus anti-D.C. bills going through the House. Most recently, seeing the two bills pass the House, even with some Democrat support, that is going to attack our cashless bail system, as well as many of the police changes that we saw post George Floyd, things like body worn cameras, things like what happens when officers are accused of misconduct, all the things that DC residents wanted to see changed in our justice system is now being attacked just because we're not a state and Congress has the ability to override our current laws.
You know what? You said something about the cash bail for those folks who live in Washington, D.C. had one of the most, I won't say liberal, but had one of the most programs that in terms of bail, men and women could get locked up for certain crimes or whatever. And there's some programs all over the city that you could be released in third-party custody. They're talking about cutting that out and bringing cash bail back and increasing the number of offenses. Because usually when you get arrested, the judge would order, if you had a robbery or a serious felony, violence, et cetera, they had the option or the discretion to keep you in detention. Now they come in with little obstruction of justice, which is like a misdemeanor. They're using all kinds of offenses that were non-incarceratable now to deny you the right to bond, and knowing that the majority of Black community members do not have money for cash bond, which is one of the reasons, a driving force in D.C. in terms of making sure that we had programs that you can be released in third-party custody, you can be released in home confinement, etc. These programs are being threatened and being cut out. What's your take on this, Doc?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up. I was having a conversation with my friend, Dr. Carmen Johnson, the other day.
Yes.
And we were just talking about how the impacts of not having money has such an impact on your journey through the justice system, right? Mm-hmm. 60% of folks who are arrested can't afford their bail. So you're talking about 60% of people who are locked up without even being convicted, and DC felt that it's not fair for folks to be locked up and stay incarcerated because they don't have money. Talking about being not able to have a job, you know, you're not able to provide for your family. And all that mental anxiety outside of the actual trial is forcing people to stay inside. We're all seeing people across the country, folks who are pleading out just because they need to be out of prison or out of jail. And what we're seeing is a trampling of DC values. And it's not fair. It's not right. And we have to speak out against these issues. So I was very glad to join, you know, council members, other shadow senator, Ankie James, as well as other organizations like Free DC, Harriet's Wildest Dreams, and a congress member himself to speak on these issues, because me and you, we're talking about folks who don't have a voice for themselves sometimes. Yes. And we're talking about folks who otherwise don't get involved with politics because they're used to seeing things like this. Folks in the office making their lives more difficult just because they can. No, this is not about public safety, because many of the people who are on bail don't reoffend during their trial. This is all about power. This is all about punching down. This is all about Republicans in office trying to win headlines. Some scaredy cat Democrats that don't want to be seen as being soft on crime. But this is not being soft on crime. This is the punching down on the poor people in D.C.'s and, to be honest, the country's continued assault on people facing poverty.
You know, this is
something to. Oh, go on, Roach.
No, go ahead, Akeisha. Go ahead.
Okay, so I just want to say that you know, some of the sentences in the proposed bill exceed existing mandatory minimums in other jurisdictions. I want to give the listeners an example. Congress is proposing a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence for first degree burglary in DC, but the same crime only triggers a 1-year mandatory minimum in states like Nevada and Georgia. And I mean, I'm just saying, relying on mandatory minimums is one size fits all, and trying to force it down the throats of DC residents is unconscionable, and it only serves to, we have our folk in institutions throughout the country only serves to strengthen the amount of time that they're spending away from DC and away from their families.
You go ahead.
Yeah, and to really highlight that point, that is one of the biggest consequences of D.C. not being a state. We have a federal justice system. We don't appoint our own judges. We have our folks who are incarcerated go all across this country, very far away from their families, being able to reintegrate. And last but not least, it's so hard to get people's records sealed and expunged. For the past 3 years, I've been doing expungement clinics, helping returning citizens get their lives in check, helping them find out illegal resources. And what I keep running into is that our neighbors in Maryland, our neighbors in Virginia, folks all around this country can easily set aside or wipe away those charges, because we know what people were convicted of 20, 30, 40 years ago aren't who they are now. And seeing people not being able to get the jobs they want, not be able to live the lives they want to live, not be able to live where they want to live, is really a consequence of Congress not putting us first.
You know, this is really messed up. And you hit it on the head, Nikichi. There's several bills pending in Congress and talking about increasing the punishment for certain crimes and adding certain crimes that are virtually non-incarceratable, obstruction of justice, or that's a fine or a misdemeanor. They're talking about increasing the prison population. At the top of the show, we said that there's 41,000 beds that Trump is using for immigration. They're looking at the cost of incarceration in America is $3.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Congressmen are now saying that they want to increase that tenfold to $30 billion. For incarceration. And the incarceration is just us. The only people that's getting locked up. We have the largest incarcerated population per capita than any city in America. Our men and boys get locked up and stay locked up longer, get impossible sentences, and get sent all across America. And they're talking about doubling that or tripling that kind of thing. Jobs reduce crime. There's nothing in my heard of coming out of the bills out of Congress. They gave $20 billion to Argentina or Venezuela, $300 billion to Ukraine, $400 million for its ballroom right next to the White House. We can stop the crime. We can reduce the crime. All we need is resources. We have the horses, but we don't have the resources. And I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, Dr. Oye, because we need somebody who speaks truth to power. These laws are just like reminiscent of Jim Crow, the discriminatory practices that have been going on in this country for years. And they're targeting young black males. And it ain't right. They're locking up our entire generation. And we need to fight. And I understand what you said, Dr. Oye. People, we are in serious, serious trouble. With the thing that's coming down right now, President Trump has made his stance clear on Washington, D.C., calling the city horribly run and promises to take over his leadership during his campaign. The president's dismay with the way the district is run has brought some concerns for some D.C. residents. On Thursday, a new bill was introduced to Congress that seeks to repeal D.C.'s Home Rule Act of 1973. That legislation currently allows the city to elect its own mayor and council to handle local matters. And we are in serious trouble if we don't stop this, because every time you look, somebody from Florida, Arizona, New Mexico, who don't live in D.C., had nothing to do with it, but yet they're in Congress, and they come up with some more repressive, restrictive laws that takes away what little rights that we do have. And that thing about money, man, people don't have no money for ball. They don't have no money to buy no food. With the way the price is going, right, you got a choice of buying medicine, paying your rent, or getting your son out of jail. Now, which one would you do?
Absolutely. And I completely 100% agree with you. I want to add another piece of legislation that I don't want us all to gloss over. They also are trying to reduce the age of sentencing of adults. So for certain crimes, they were introducing a bill that up to 14 years old would be tried as adults. And when you're coupling that with the juvenile curfews that we're doing locally, what we are doing is surveillance. What we're doing is criminalizing young black kids, young brown kids being outside. And I think we have to bring this up because, as you know, if a young person catches a charge early, you're creating a pipeline to prison and future misery. And when you're talking about their increasing investment in private prisons and they're trying to get more beds, a lot of that planning is getting our young people into those spaces. So we had to create more programs, but we also got to spend more time with kids. For the past 12 years, I've been volunteering in class with the group saying, putting white coats on kids, putting goggles on them, putting gloves on them, but making sure they call each other doctors. Yeah. I believe if young people know what they want to be, if they want to be you, Roach, if they want to run a radio station like Nikichi, they'll start making different decisions each and every day to get themselves to that path. Right now, without that guidance, folks just stand outside. And I believe rather than spending money on putting them to prison, we need to spend money and put them into college, because that's best for all of us.
You know, you just said it. We have more prisons, jails, and detention centers than we have colleges and universities than any other country in the world. We are locking them out. And again, I've been wondering, why are we targeting our young black males? If you go down to D.C. Superior Court, in the juvenile division, you don't see nothing there but black and brown defendants.
The juvenile division.
Yeah, you're right, Nikisha. In fact, I just read the other day that if you go to federal court now, there are 95% of the people plead guilty. 90 to 95% plead guilty. There's very few trials because of these laws. And to take a 14-year-old kid and take him to trial as a man, as an adult, and they send him to men prisons. There's no federal juvenile facilities for juveniles who've been tried as adults and they're still juveniles. So they have to be merged in with the men population.
Exactly.
And let me tell you, folks,
they're babies.
These are babies. You don't want to see these young kids in these. You got some guys in there would take advantage of these youngsters. Mm. And that's a terrible feeling to destroy this guy's freedom, to destroy his manhood and destroy his future dreams. Why is it that we're targeting, or that they are targeting black youth to take a 14-year-old kid to trial as an adult, and D.C. gives out more time, longer times, than any other city in the country? So we're talking about young. I got two cousins who just come home, been on. They did 50 years. Another one did 51 years. And the judge, and he went to his casework, and he said, "What's your employment prospects?" He's 71 years old, never had a job in his life. What the hell can he do? Right. Who gonna hire a 71-year-old man to do what? We got men and women being released, and I think about 5 to 10 per week. We got men and women who are mentors, who can be credible messengers, who's on the street. We can reduce the crime and make it safe, but we don't have the resources. We got the horses.
Right.
We don't have the resources. And again, I don't care how we cut it. It's all about racism, man. It's cut to the chase. It's anytime they pass laws that would penalize black youth at 14 years old, and for the rest of his life is over. He's finished. The majority of men and women in prison come home. 70 to 80% are returning. You want somebody to come out 50 years, 70 years old, 75 and 80. What can they do?
Whole life.
At the top of the show, we mentioned about Jamil Alameen. We had him on in January. We talked about him. This man was dying. He was diagnosed with myeloma cancer in January. And in January, he didn't have long to live. And we've had him on the show. We talked about it. Here, 10 months later, he dies. Nobody stands up to make sure the old people who did, he'd been locked up over 25 years. Isn't that enough? Can you have the decency to let the man die with his family at home? This is happening to a lot of our people. So I'm glad you're taking a stand, Doc, because we need somebody who is not afraid to speak truth to power. Because, man, what's happening now, this is only the beginning of a long nightmare that won't end.
Well, we've been the gross national product since slavery. Slavery, and we still are. With bail bond, the prisons. And we see in our face all the madness going on. It's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. What can we do? That's the question I always ask.
You know, there's a couple other bills.
Dr. Oye, as Shadow Representative, what is it that you are doing? Talk to us about what you're doing to try to abate some of these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe there was a question I may have skipped over that Roach asked earlier. In the role as the Shadow Representative, we fight for D.C. statehood. We lobby legislation that positively or lobby against legislation that negatively impacts us in D.C. And this is just one of those examples. But, you know, when Mrs. Brown mentioned about the family impact, it brought me back to an event that happened in COVID. And I remember when it was 5 years ago when the pandemic was taken over, Trump actually did something called compassionate release. Yeah. And that allowed folks who were incarcerated with nonviolent offenses to serve out some of their term at home. And these people were having jobs, creating families, supporting their community. And there was a stipulation in the compassionate release that once the pandemic ends, these folks will return back to the walls of the prison.
Yes.
And there were people that were coming to me, and they weren't actually the folks that were released from prison. It was the moms. It was the siblings. Yes. It was the coworkers. So it reminded me that when somebody's in prison, the entire community is in prison with them. So I wrote to the Department of Justice. We collaborated with some organizations. They thought that as a Shadow Representative, we couldn't do anything. But we kept hounding. And about a year into President Biden's administration, Merrick Garland allowed all those who were compassionately released to stay at home for the duration of their sentence.
Yes.
And only less than 1% of the folks reoffended, meaning that over 99% of the people that were released from prison were already reacclimated to society. And that's what this is about. There's no Department of Corrections. It's just the Department of Punishment. And everybody's punished when somebody's in prison, especially when they're 14, 15, 16 years old, especially when they're shipped away to other states where low-income D.C. residents can't travel there regularly and talk to their folks. So not only am I talking against this, but we're also doing some work with what we have, because it's not about what I can't do. It's about working with the community to see what we can do. And we've been able to make a difference, and I've been able to learn a lot. You know, I'm not a returning citizen. I was able to learn from people like you, Roach, people like you, Ms. Brown, people like you, Nikichi, because you guys are the ones that give me the perspective that I carry out this work with.
So, you know, Roach was very instrumental. You know, Roach, you know, you had Gwen Levi on your show a number of times, but elderly Baltimore woman who was granted compassionate release. And they tried to send her back after she had a job and all that. So glad to know that you were on point with all those issues as well, Dr. Oye, Ade Oye, Oye, why? You know, I like to say the name, and I know your history is from Nigeria. You know, and I know I don't pronounce my name the way it would be in Nigeria, but it's all good because
it's all good.
I've been colonized. I say Nkechi as opposed to Nkechi, but it's all good.
We still love you. We love you.
You know, Dr. Oye, as our shadow representative in Congress,
yeah.
And I'm glad to hear that you went outside of your circle of comfort and dealt with this compassion release thing, because that bill is still on the drawing board. But there's four laws that's coming down.
Right.
Strong Citizens for Safer D.C. Streets Act, D.C. Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act, Second Chance Amendment Act, D.C. Crimes, District of Columbia Juvenile Sentencing Reform Act. All these laws and bills that's been entertained, not one of them is dealing with jobs, providing the necessary resources and services that these young boys need to stay in the street. We're being punished. And something else I just want to add, everybody that's listening to the show, if you're Black, prisons is a direct connection. You have a direct connection to corrections. 7 out of every 10 Black males and Black boys have an arrest record, been in prison, or been stopped by the police. So that leaves 3 out of 10. The 3 that's not locked up has a friend, loved one, son, brother, somebody in prison. Or you're getting a phone call, or you're sending money order to somebody in prison. So the prison industrial complex is an integral part of the Black community, and we need to be aware of that and make sure that they're taking some of our strong men and women and taking their lives away, giving somebody 100 years, 200 years, showing some crimes, punishing. As Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren said in 62, that you were sent to prison as punishment, not to be punished. And if we're going through hell in the street, let me tell you something. What the men and women and the kids are going through inside institutions, ladies and gentlemen, it is hell on earth. They are being dogged, abused, misused, trampled, violated, etc. And there's nowhere to turn.
So I have a question for Representative after Martine does station ID.
This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. You want to know what's going on? You need to tune in right here. This is the Roach Brown Crossroads Nkechi. We're going to give you the facts as they are.
And mention your name, because you're here with us too, Wolf.
Hey. I'm 13 more around.
I ain't going nowhere without my wifey.
Representative Oye, I'm just curious, as someone who I know was raised in Boston, came to D.C., what got you interested in becoming the shadow representative for the District of Columbia since, I think, 2020, oh. I think? Yeah, so talk to us about your trajectory.
Absolutely. You know, I'll be quick with this. I know we only have so much time. But long story short, I never thought I was going to be in politics. As you mentioned, a child of Nigerian immigrant parents with a Nigerian first name, middle and last name, there was not much for me to hide. But my mom and dad were really involved in the community. My mom was doing education work. My dad was almost like a community leader, solving all disputes amongst the Nigerian community in Massachusetts. But I also became a pharmacist. So when I moved down to D.C., I thought I was just going to be volunteering in classrooms, working in a pharmacy, coming home, rinse, wash, repeat. And one day I was working on a U Street Rite Aid, which is now a Walgreens. And one of my patients came to me, and she knew me a little bit. I knew her, and we just started chatting about getting more involved in the community. And she told me about something called ANC. And she left the pharmacy. I looked at my phone, looked up ANC, and I saw a South African political party. So I thought she was telling me to go back to Africa, which made me upset because I'm not even South African. So she comes back 30 days smiling. I'm like, you blah, 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 blah. And that's when she's like, no, ANC, Advised Neighbor Commission, not political party. So I said, okay. I'm like, are you an ANC? She like, no. I'm like, what are you now? She's like, I'm the Ward 1 council member. This is Brandon Doe. So thankfully, I didn't yell at her about being South African or not being. I finally moved to Ward 8, went to my ANC meeting, you know, figured that it didn't run as well as I wanted to. And I kind of was vocal about it until someone turned around and told me, if I'm so much better, why don't I run? Ran for ANC, won by one vote. And Long story short, I did a DC statehood lobbying day. I found online and they were offering free food. So I'm like, I'm gonna go. So it was a good event, but I feel like it could have been more diverse. I was the only black person in some of my cohorts talking about statehood. And I figured if I couldn't bring some of those folks with me to Congress, maybe I can do the reverse. And we brought Congresswoman Norton to my ANC, talked about federal politics, and I just caught the bug. Ran for the shadow representative seat, and I've been there ever since.
Okay, oh, well, that's powerful. I think we have a caller on that's calling in. If you want to participate in this discussion, the phone number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. If you want to participate in our discussion with our good friend, Dr. Ole, question, Doc, what, as a shadow representative representing us from Washington, D.C., what authority or power do your office have? Is there anything that you can do directly to counter some of this juggy boogie that's coming down off Capitol Hill? What authority do you have as a shadow representative in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, so because D.C. is not a state, we don't have a congressional vote. But even beyond that, you know, we have a Congresswoman Norton on the Hill. My office is even removed from there. I am actually at the in the Wilson Building, which is D.C. City Hall. Mm-hmm. So on paper, this role has no plenary power, which means we can't stop anything from happening with the laws with our jurisdiction. We can't move anything through Congress by ourselves. But because of the people power in this office, because of folks like you, Roach, because of folks in the community, like the mayor's office, returning citizens affairs, because of organizations like D.C. Appleseed, because of my friend, Dr. Johnson, as well as organizations like the Alliance of Concerned Men, because of the Cruise Network, we're able to do a lot more than what's expected of us, whether it's having focused meetings, whether it's lobbying, whether it's sending resolutions to national agencies. We've been able to move things as a collective. But in terms of my specific power, it's very limited what I can do to stop certain things. However, we've gone to other states, talked to their constituents, calling their senators to make their senators move in the direction we need them to move. We've reached out to national organizations like the League of Women Voters to amplify some of these conversations so folks that don't even look like us are paying attention to issues that pertain mostly to us as a black community. And we've been able to multiply the small impact that we could have to becoming a large force.
Thank you.
Got a caller on the line.
Okay. Question or comment, you're on the air, please. Come on.
This is Dr. Lewis Tate. Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
This is Dr. Lewis Tate. Do you hear me?
Doc. Yes, sir. Come on with it. Come on, you're on the air, sir.
Boycott. That is not about anger, but it's about awareness. And it's about teaching our community to shop between our ears before we shop with our dollars. And every dollar is a ballot we cast in the economy. Every purchase is a yes or a no. And if corporations refuse to play fair with our community, then we won't shop there, period. Target voluntarily promised to invest in the black community after the George Floyd murder. Their words, not ours, but this administration rolled back diversity, equity, and inclusion, and Target was the first one to cave. They folded faster than a cheap tent in a thunderstorm. And we're saying not this time. We know our truth. We know our power. We know we strive when we are unified. This is not about hate. It's about accountability. It's about reminding corporations that the black community is not an afterthought. We are a major economic force. We contribute billions. But if they don't respect us at the board table, at the hiring table, in their community investments, then we'll keep our dollars in our pockets. Here's how and our audience can participate.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello? Keep going, sir, Reverend. Yes, sir, keep going.
Go ahead.
And this, here's how you can participate. Here's what this movement looks like in real time. Thursday, don't spend a dime. Spend time with your family and your friends. Black Friday, total blackout. Don't spend any money.
Yes.
Saturday, shop shop black, shop immigrant, shop local. Sunday, circulate dollars with organizations that support our community, i.e. mutual aid. And then Cyber Monday, digital blackout. Don't buy anything online.
Yes.
We're hitting the economy where it listens, the bottom line. And this is not a spectator movement. This is participation time. We want you to join us this Saturday, November 29th, 2025 at 11 a.m. for a rally at the Target on 3114th Street Northwest, right here in Washington, D.C. Bring a friend, bring a neighbor, bring a family, bring a cousin, bring anybody who debates everything. Then commit to coming another Saturday, because we're there every Saturday at 11 a.m. We've been the only really in-person organization or community that has been at a Target since March, when it started back during the Lenten season. And yes, there'll be some national leadership with us this Saturday, people who are known for standing with our people, Nina Turner, Tamika Mowry, and Reverend Dr. Jamal H. Bryant. These aren't sideline commentators. They are frontline organizers. They are coming because this movement matters. At the end of the day, our message is very simple. If we don't protest just to make noise, we protest to make change. We don't boycott because we are bitter. We boycott because we are builders. And if corporations won't respect our dignity, our dollars, and our destiny, then we ain't buying it.
Lots of protests in D.C. Put down our throats. So yes, indeed, it's all interconnected.
Absolutely. Yes, I appreciate that. I was actually the first and probably one of two elected officials in D.C. to not only support the boycott, but actually be present for it. So I want to thank you, Dr. Tate. I want to give a special shout out to my brother, Dante O'Hara, Reverend Patty Fears, all of the folks who've been out there, because there's been days when there's only five people out there. There's been days when there's 20, if not dozens, and they've been out there every single week, you know, bringing this energy not only to Target, but also showing up at a reduced Columbia Heights farmers market, because a lot of these immigrant owned farmer market stations, they're gone because of ICE. So we're not only speaking truth to power to Target's DEI betrayal, but also to all those that oppressed black and brown people. So I want to thank you, Dr. Tate, for taking the time out to speak on that.
Yes.
Please continue that energy and show up on Saturday. We got some big weights coming out. And I'm not talking me. I'm talking about the big, big national. So please be there. Please check it out. Too. And also, please find other options than Target.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Tate.
Can I mention one other person that's Raylan S. Hagler?
Forgive me, Reverend Hagler. Forgive me.
Yes, we need to keep up beyond that.
I apologize.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Tate. Appreciate it.
Keep him in our prayers because he's battling cancer. So keep him in our prayers.
And he's a strong soldier, been on the front line. So join local and national Target boycott leaders on the picket line to send Target a message: no diversity, equity, and inclusion, no dollars. So that's this Saturday, the 29th, 11 p.m. at 3100.
11 a.m. 11 a.m. Don't get out there at 11 p.m.
Yeah, 11 a.m. Yeah, 11 p.m.
You might get caught up in the curfew.
I'm too old for
that. Thank you so much.
We got another caller.
We should take our next caller, please. You're on the air. Question or comment? Hello.
Two comments.
Hello.
Come on. When you were talking about the no bail option, I was helping a friend fill out a SNAP application in Maryland. So I don't know if this applies to D.C., but on that application, it asks if anybody in your family is incarcerated. So what does that mean? You don't get to get food for your kids if you're
incarcerated. That's right.
That's what that means.
That's what that means. That's one of them collateral consequences where they slide in to somebody being incarcerated. You apply for food stamps or SNAP. Your relative ain't. And wherever they lived or been should have no impact on you getting it. But this is one of the things that Dr. Oyates, Congressman Norton, and different folks have been fighting. They keep inserting this criminal history into these applications, and you've been denied the right for whatever you're trying to seek. So this is one of the things that we've been working on and trying to keep that stuff out. And you're right, young lady. You need to bring it to somebody's attention, to your city councilman, or to your the county exec, or wherever you live in Maryland, to see to get this thing removed from SNAP, because they've been using that to deny returning citizens the right to get food stamps. And that's not right. Yes.
So that was one of my concerns. I didn't know if it applied in D.C., but I saw with my own eyes on that Montgomery County State of Maryland application. And then my next comment, and I'm going to go and let you all respond, is that if we have Black Friday, then Black money needs to be in the Black community. That's all I need to say.
That's right.
Be aware.
Thank you. I love you and I appreciate you.
And thank you. Again, we spend a couple $1 trillion a year as Black people. We shouldn't be living this rough. There's nowhere in the world, we're in the richest country in the world, we got people who are hungry, who don't have no place to sleep, sleeping on streets. We got kids. In D.C., the truancy rate is 40%. So 4 kids out of 10 don't make it to school. It ain't because they don't want to go. The house is not safe. There's stuff going on in the house they won't be a part of. There's violence. They can't cross certain neighborhoods because of gang territory. So our kids got to navigate a lot of stuff. Doc, one of the things I suggested 2 weeks ago with our guest was with an attorney is that we should have juveniles or youth elected as city councilmen and as a youth mayor, because it's not fair to keep making laws and rules and the kids are not there. The same way the white men make laws about abortion and fertility, and there's no women in the room, but yet they decide what's best for a woman's body. We're deciding what's best for the kids. The kids need to participate. We need to include them, let them have a voice in the representation of what's going on. Anytime we got a bill that's pertaining to the kids, we should hear from the kids. We decide laws, and they got to abide by them, and we're punishing and penalizing these kids and criminalizing them. So we like to throw that back out in the air again, that we need elected representatives from the youth population on all levels across the board. What's your take on that, Doc?
Yes.
Amen.
Amen.
Right. You can't have good outcomes for a community that's not included in the conversation. And not only not included in the conversation, not provided a seat at the table. As someone who lives in Ward 8, I know the difference between being talked to and being talked at. And right now, some people are being talked at.
There you go. And that's part of the problem, man. And last week, 2 weeks ago, there was 300 kids that act up down at the wharf in Southwest Washington. 200-300. There's 49,000 kids, 50,000 kids in public school. So you're talking about 200-300 out of 49,500. And they're being punished with the curfew and this kind of stuff. The acts of a few will penalize the majority. But we got men and women who can relate to these kids.
Absolutely.
But they don't get the funds. We're going to send the funds to Argentina, to Ukraine, to build a goddamn $400 million ballroom. Right. And these kids don't have no place to stay, nowhere to eat, sleeping on the streets. And we keep walking by them saying, the kids are out of control. We're out of control because we're not dealing with the kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Not to get on my soapbox, but
sometimes
kids can be
get
kids, on it. Right? And I don't think it's a crime for 300 Black kids to be around each other. It's a crime to hit another person. There's crimes in terms of breaking into someone's car. There's crimes into robbing somebody. But those are actual crimes. So if you enforce the law, then you're enforcing the law. But putting down a curfew just because a certain amount of kids may not look comfortable for the people living in the community is not a reason to continue this juvenile curfew. It's a 3-month thing, but every 3 months, they say we still have solutions. Let's spend another 3 months. Either you're going to have a full-time curfew or you're going to address the issues. You can't just keep saying now there's a brawl amongst a bunch of teenagers, because that's what teenagers do. They fight each other because they got nothing else to do. We have to go back to bringing programs, bringing time, letting folks say, hey, if you continue doing this, this is the direction you're heading to. Actually treat these situations with the care that they have instead of slapping on these archaic rules that are not going to help.
Yeah, draconian.
I'm a pharmacist, right?
Our time is up.
Entire body. You can't just throw a medicine at one symptom and then be afraid of the side effect and treat that with another drug. That's what our council is doing right now. It is not going to work.
Our time is up. You got a
I'm
minute,
sorry.
Doc. No, don't be sorry, Jack. You're on fire. Keep on rolling.
Not yet.
We got a minute or two before we get off it. You want to give us some closing remarks, Doc, on how people can reach you and what they can do to help make about a change or stop some of this foolishness that's happening. You got it.
Absolutely. You can reach me on my website or my social media is Rep OYEDC, REPOYEDC. You can reach out to me via email, adeoye.owlewa@dc.gov. But to be honest, you want to see me? I'm outside. Come out to the community. Stop by Roach Brown. Stop by the Cruise Network. We have our Nexus Bungee Clinic coming up in February. And I'll give you more information about that later. But to stay involved, please keep in touch with me. I try to be accessible as possible. But together, we'll make a better D.C.
And Roach, I just want to say all these things that Representative Oye was talking about. It's just another reminder as to why D.C. statehood is not just a political issue. It's a matter of basic human rights and self-determination. Exactly. So, you know, the stripping of our local authority must stop, must end right here, right now.
Taxation without representation. We're paying taxes, but we don't have a representation in Congress. Our time is up. We selected a song, Nikeisha, by C.C. Winan.
Okay.
Check out the song, and it captures what we're talking about this morning. I want to thank Dr. Oye for being here. Thank you, Nikeisha and Mertine. And thank everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. But check out this song at the end with C.C. Winan. It says it all. Go ahead.
Yes.
Hello.
Sometimes I fall to my knees and pray. Come, Jesus, come. Let today be the day. Sometimes I feel like but I'm holding on to a hope that won't fade. Come, Jesus, come. We've been waiting so long for the day you return to heal every hurt and right every wrong. Jesus comes, let today be the day. To face. come and lay it all down. 'Cause it might be today. The time is right now. There's no need to wait. Your past will be washed by rivers of grace.
News family, you can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
The Caribbean Disaster Relief and Recovery Alliance, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation, is seeking relief aid supplies for the victims of Hurricane Melissa. They are accepting non-perishable food items, toiletries, medical supplies, and monetary donations. All funds will go towards Hurricane Melissa relief. Drop-off locations and more information is available at cdrra.org. That's cdrra.org.
This is a special invitation, a call for entries to We the 92%, an anthology of Black women's documenting this time. Your essays, poetry, prayers of resistance, open letters, and more, preserving our voices, our truths, and our testimony in a time when our history is being rewritten, challenged, and erased, are being accepted. Submission deadline is midnight, December 20th. Details at wethe92.com.
This is Lawrence Ham, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress. I invite you to join the Free Mumia Movement and allies on our long walk for justice for Mumia Abu-Jamal and for the dignity and medical needs of the incarcerated. We are walking 103 miles from Germantown, Philadelphia, to the State Correctional Institution in Frackville, starting November 28th and arriving 12 days later at SCI Mahanoy. We demand an end to elder abuse, an end to systematic medical neglect, freedom for all political prisoners, and we march to demand freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal now. MarchForMumia.org for details. Again, that's MarchForMumia.org.
With love, not fear.
Thursday, November 28th, WPFW honors the National Day of Mourning, commemorates the birthday of Jimi Hendrix, and offers music centering gratitude from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. Bushmeat opens the day with a birthday tribute to Jimi Hendrix. At noon, WPFW takes you once again live to the annual United American Indians of New England rally in Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. Finally, James Funk offers music filled with gratitude from 3 until 7 p.m. That's all here on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nick, and you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, November 25th. I'm Jaina Parker, and I am solo today, but my co-host, David Raven, will join us back soon. So listeners, please call us right now at 202-588-0888.